everyone, and welcome to Lenny's Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 29. In this podcast, I will be interviewing Noel. His nick is Weirded Out. He is an experienced Gen 2 user, and also, as part of his day job, he gets to administer Gen 2 servers. How cool is that? I am being overly nice to him in the hopes that he has an opening one day so I can have my dream job. The only problem is he lives in Melbourne, Australia, and I live in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. But hey, I can dream. A little update on how my learning Python is going. I finished the class I was taking at my local community college. This was an online class, and it did keep me motivated. Also, our Python group is still going strong. We get together on Freenode, the channel hash Python group. I use our wiki to put down everything I learned, because I need to store it somewhere, as my brain has the tendency to forget real fast. The interview is being recorded with Asterix, and Noel uses a Kija soft phone to place the call. I have done a few of these, and the call quality can be borderline depending on many factors when the call travels such a long distance.
Hi, David.
Hey, you sound good.
That's good. Yeah, you sound nice and clear also. It's a crisp, clear line from where I am. It's great.
Yeah, it's a long ways away, so sometimes there's a few glitches, but you sound good.
Yeah.
How long have you been a Gen 2 user?
I've been a Gen 2 user probably for the last 3 years, mostly. I started off just basically hearing lots about it and how great it is from various forums and reviews that I look at from time to time. And I thought, look, it sounds like a distro that's somewhat complicated, but I'd like to give it a go. So I did, and I guess you could say I never really looked back since then.
How and where have you implemented Gen 2, and why was it chosen?
After playing around with it in my own time for a period of time, for a good 3 to 6 months, I started to see the flexibility of the distro compared to others that I had worked with at the time. I saw Gen 2 as being a product that you could make, it could be as complicated as you like in terms of how you want to implement it, or it could be really simple and just be a simple firewall. So I was growing in familiarity with it. So being someone who's up for a bit of a challenge, I decided to implement a home network, or to replace my home servers with Gen 2 initially, and that worked out really well with what I was doing. And so then I began phasing it in at work. I run an IT shop, and I thought at the time we were running SUSE Linux before it became open SUSE, and started to phase it in to replace those services. But they were starting to get a little bit old. So that's I guess in a nutshell is the reason why, mainly familiarity and the flexibility that Gen 2 provides compared to other distros, which tend to, when you initially install them, although it's not true for all, I'm sure, but for the ones I've been playing with at the time, you end up with a whole lot of services and the like pre-installed, which I didn't really want. So Gen 2 was a good fit for that, to replace those.
How many servers do you have there at work?
At work, we have we run four servers. We have a firewall, which is a very simple little box. It's only a Celeron 400 processor with I think about 256 mega RAM and a pretty small hard drive. And all that basically does is serve up a few internal web pages and act as a firewall. It also runs a couple of MySQL databases. We also have I guess you could, I would probably call it a server that's used universally for a bunch of things. It's a more beefy box. It's a P4, although I guess by today's standards it's still pretty old. It's about 3 years old now, but it's a P4 hyper-threaded 3.2 gigahertz machine with 3 gig of RAM. We just recently upgraded, put an extra gig in it. It runs Samba, Cups print server. It also runs our CVS server. I can just hear people in the background sighing despair at the use of the term CVS, but we've used it for so long and it works pretty well for us that we haven't really needed to move on from there. But also too, it kicks off some backups to a backup server as well. Runs a few other databases on there. And that box works pretty well. It's pretty bulletproof running Gentoo. And that's one of the boxes that we replaced. We moved from SUSE. And then we have a third server that's also running Gentoo, which is basically just the mirror of the other universal server. So basically it's a hot swap box. Needs a little bit of tinkering with the host names and so forth. But when the first server failed, which it did, I had a hard drive fail on it earlier this year. Basically, 5 minutes on the box, changed the host names around, and voila, people can start using the backup server. So that's also running Gentoo, and that's P4, just slightly less powerful, a little less RAM, but it does the job as a backup really well. And we have a fourth server, but that's running CentOS 4.6 at the moment. Eventually it'll be 4.7, but and that's basically just a demonstration server. We keep a lot of demo databases for the product that we sell on there, and that can be accessed through the web, and that's just there just mainly for compatibility reasons, because our product the back end of it runs it's commercially supported for Red Hat environments, so we keep that as a CentOS box. But the grunt work is all done on Gentoo, as far as I'm concerned.
What has your journey been with Linux, and how did you get to settle on using Gentoo?
The journey has been it started pretty shaky. It probably started, I guess, back before the turn of the millennium, I would say, perhaps with most long-term Linux users. My first Linux distro, which I gave a shot with, was SUSE Linux. It was SUSE, I believe, 7.2 or 7.3, and it was only a short time that I used it. I got a little bit frustrated with it to a degree. But I guess you could say the seeds were planted back then. And although I reverted back to using a Windows environment after that, I would try various distros, in the time shortly after that. Eventually, I managed to sink my teeth into SUSE, I think it would have been 8 point something or other. And that was really good. I had that on my work desktop for a while. I was dual booting that with Windows, and I'd only really use Windows at that stage for just for doing a lot of testing of my product when I needed to test on the Windows environment, and did most of my development and my day-to-day stuff on SUSE back then. At home, I'd converted my desktop originally to Mandrake 10.1. I actually purchased the CD or the DVD, I think it was, actually. And that was a really good distro at the time. I really enjoyed using Mandrake back then. I think 10.1 was a bit of a milestone for them. The product was really settled and had a lot of great multimedia features compared to other distributions of the day. Then from there, I at home started to have a few problems with Mandrake over a bit of time. I found that NVIDIA drivers weren't really behaving well with that particular kernel, and I was just having some other issues with updates. I don't know if I really entered into RPM hell with it, but it was probably pretty close. There were some issues. So I ended up, by that stage, wanting to sink my teeth into something a little bit more challenging in terms of trying to learn more about Linux, because Mandrake does a lot of things for you with their control panel. So I got into a bit of Arch Linux back then, and Arch was still pretty immature as a distro. I think it was only around for about a year, year and a half when I got into it. I think I got into it at when it was Wombat, which I think is 0.6. And that was a good distribution. I think that's really was the when I started to get a bit interested in Gentoo itself. Arch and Gentoo have a lot of similarities. Both are rolling release cycle type distributions. And that was really interesting me, because I guess one of the major peeves with me is having to reinstall the OS every 6 to 12 months, which is something I really thought wasn't necessary. So Arch was sort of scratching that itch, you could say, being a rolling release cycle. But the only thing with Arch at the time, it was a little unstable. I'm sure it's much, much better now. I think I've been hearing a lot from other podcasts that use, of whom people use Arch, and they say it's a really good distro now. So it's one that, I keep my eye on. I've got a bit of a soft spot for it. But one of the things one of the things that sort of got me away from Arch in the end was the instability of it, probably the lack of flexibility. I really wanted to start compiling a lot of my own code, not my own code, but code with different options and flags that you could do with Gentoo, but couldn't do with Arch. I mean, you could do it with Arch, but it's a lot more work. It's not really designed to be a source-based distribution where you can do that, although it is possible. So that's when I started to investigate using Gentoo. And in the end, I took the plunge and gave it a go at home. And although it took me a few tries installing, I just persevered with it. And I think that's one of the things of Gentoo. People tend to try it once, they struggle with getting it installed, and then they give up. I think if you've got a bit of time on your hands initially, it's worth the pain to install it a few times and just sort of cut your teeth on it. And then once you sort of invest that time in it, it's a really good distro to keep and maintain, and it's a real joy to use. Yeah, I've also cut my teeth as well in the office with Fedora, and before that Red Hat 9 and Fedora, and today I use Gentoo exclusively on my laptop, and just have Windows XP running virtually. Just for work purposes, if I need to test a program on XP, I can just bring up VMware and there it is. The Gentoo is definitely the distro for me at this point in time.
What aspects of Gentoo do you feel the developers and maintainers have got right?
Oh, there's a lot of great things in Gentoo. I really love the portage system. I've really come to appreciate it, and I think it's a marvelous piece of code that I think that they've written to get that working so wonderfully. I really like how easy it is to just make changes to use flags. I think to try and keep your desktop or your servers as lean as you can by just using the use flags that you need is really a real advantage of the product. It's really easy to maintain Gentoo. I mean, I've heard it criticized in the past about how time consuming it is, but I mean, I look after three Gentoo servers in the office. I've got at home, I have a Gentoo server with running OpenVZ with three VPSs on it. I've got my children who run all Gentoo desktops, and there's four of those. I've got my own Gentoo laptop. I've got two Gentoo media centers, and really, it's not a big issue to keep them up to date. You could call it. Well, that's a bit of a hack. I've got something of a Gentoo, disk file cache that I keep on my home server in my office. And so things just get downloaded once and then just deployed to my other Gentoo machine. So it works really well. It's not that hard. I mean, occasionally there are some issues, which we'll probably go into, but all up, it's just so easy to maintain. And the fact that it's a rolling release as well, you never have to install it again. I've got boxes that have been running for a couple of years, and you know, you hear about issues people have had installing Hardy Heron and other, you know, other distros from time to time. Things just not quite working right. With Gentoo, if you have a problem, it's usually not mission critical. I say usually, sometimes it is, but all up, it just works really well. It's rock solid, it's stable. I think for me, it's as close as being the perfect, definitely perfect server system. But also too, I found as a desktop, it's also rock solid. My laptop has been running Gentoo for over 12 months, and I occasionally do some pre-sales work with would-be clients of ours, and I'll take my Gentoo laptop along, and I'll run my demos on plasma screens and on projectors. Not a problem with Gentoo, just with Windows running as a virtual machine on it, but they don't even know the difference. It's just so robust.
What is it about Gentoo you would like to see improved?
One of the things, I guess, from my perspective that I'd like to see is, I remember some years ago, back when I was a greenhorn, as you would probably call it, with Gentoo, I installed it and was just really cutting my teeth into it. They made a change to the GCC compiler, and I remember before they did that on the Gentoo homepage, they basically alerted everybody before they actually released it that this was going to be a major change and it could break some systems if precautions weren't made. So they basically published how to compile it and how to merge it into your own code, and I thought that was fantastic. But since then, I haven't noticed them do such things with potentially mission-critical type, fundamental or foundational packages within the system. You know, an example is Expat a while ago. I mean, people installed it, and I run a few GNOME desktops here at home and one in the office, and they broke, and it would have been nice to sort of be pre-warned that, you know, this was a potential problem, and with offering solutions on how to resolve it. Also too, just recently, for some, Python update has been an issue. It has been for me, but mainly due to my impatience rather than anything else. But I shouldn't say Python update, it was the upgrade from Python 2.4 to 2.5. I noticed forums, a lot of people have had some issues with it. So, you know, things like that where they're found a fundamental type change to the system, it'd be great to have a couple of weeks warning for those of us who do look at the Gentoo homepage. Like, I look at it every day just to catch any tips and tricks that might come through there, or just get news, and also to look out for any potential releases of packages that could potentially break my system, and hopefully with some solutions so I can plan and prepare for it. I do use my home network as sort of like a test network for my office, so if anything breaks, it breaks at home, and then I can have the weekend to fix it. but so that I don't have to go through the same pain at work. But having said that, look, it's in the 2 to 3 years I've been using Gen 2, I think I've only had problems maybe really once, and that was with Expat really. And I had some issues with the Python upgrade, but nothing that I wasn't able to resolve. I guess it's just, as I said before, just my own impatience running Emerge Dept Clean a little too soon, which is something I've learnt, I guess, just sort of taught me a lesson there, just to, if Python updates, run the Python updater before you Dept Clean your system. Otherwise, you won't do any Python update, won't work. So yeah, look, but all up, there's not a lot of, I can't really criticise it at the moment. I think the guys there are doing a great job, and it's a real pleasure to use a system that works so well, you know, 99.9% of the time.
What open source software can you not live without on your networks at home and at work?
Okay. There's so much great software out there that's open source, and I think I've to pick out a few. I would, starting with my desktop, I think I'm a KDE user on my desktop, so two great KDE programs that I use a lot are Yarquake, and I think GNOME has an equivalent called Tilda. Yarquake is great. If you need to bring up a quick terminal session, you just hit a hotkey like an F12 or something, and it just brings out like a little scroll shell that you can just type in commands, SSH into other servers or boxes. And it's a great little utility. And then you hit F12 and it goes back up. And I love using that. As a developer slash system administrator, I find that a really useful tool. Another great one is Catapult for KDE. It's another excellent tool. Basically with Catapult, you just, again, it's another hotkey sort of thing. So you might hit, for me, it's control space bar. It basically brings up a little pop-up key-sensitive window. You start typing in the menu item that you want to launch. Say if you want to launch OpenOffice, you might just start typing up Open, and then it will just recognize that you want to open up OpenOffice. And then once it's recognized, it'll give you the option. You hit Enter, and it just starts the application. And that's been a real help, because it saves me having to scroll through menus and the like. So I rarely touch my KDE menu now. So on the desktop, those are probably the two major things, major programs that I love using. On servers, there's the stock standard ones, like Samba and Cups are great products. Samba's come a long way, particularly. It's really fast now. I mount my Samba shares using SIPs. There's a product, it's in the Gen 2 portage tree called mount.sips, which exclusively uses the SIPs kernel module. And that's really good. I believe it works much better than using the standard Samba module. So that's a little tip if you want to try it out. And also, Samba works really well with XP desktops in the office. They're all, everyone else unfortunately uses XP desktops, much to my dismay in a way, they have no problems with Samba. It's for them, it just they log into their XP boxes and their shares are there ready for them, and I've had no complaints with performance or cutouts or anything like that. SSH and OpenSSL are great too, good products. Everyone I would imagine would know what they are. One great monitoring tool that I use is LogWatch. I like to keep things pretty simple, and which is a fantastic tool. Also, it's in the Gen 2 repositories. If you run a server, you can it basically runs the cron job, and you can schedule it to run after hours or whatever the case may be. And basically, it summarizes your messages log for you and emails it to you. And then you can sift through the log file. You can have it show as much detail or as little detail as you like. I have it sort of somewhere in the middle. But it gives me information such as any firewall, packet drops, anything I've emerged. Say if I've done an update, the next day it'll give me a list of what I've emerged, just in a nice simple format. It also will recognize if you've got the smart mon tools running in the background, and if there's problems with your hard drives, it'll actually alert you that you've got some issues with your drive potentially. So it gives you basically all that sort of information. If there's problems with cups, it'll alert you with that too. It'll find those. So it's a great little tool. I run that on all my servers, and each morning when I get my cup of coffee, I'll sit down and go through my logs. IPTraf is a nice little end cursors tool that I use on servers. If I suspect there might be some problems in terms of any potential breaches, or if there's any traffic that might be slowing down the network, I'll just quickly whip that up, and I'll just have a bit of a look at what's going on. Cacti is a great tool. I'm a big fan of tools like Cacti and MRTG and things like that, and I run Cacti on my servers both at home and in the office, and with that I can monitor not just what's going on at the moment in terms of memory or hard drive usage or network usage, but also too it just keeps a record over a period of time, so you can look at trends, which is very important. As a sysadmin, you want to look at how systems are progressing. You know, is hard drive space filling up really quickly? You know, and then you can go and investigate, you know, what might be causing that. So it's a great tool. I mentioned SmartMon tools. That's a great tool for keep monitoring your hard drives. At home, I like using Bashpodder for downloading my podcasts. So I'm a bit of a podcast junkie, particularly when it comes to Linux podcasts. So I pretty much listen to all of them. And I've got to tell you, David, when I found your podcast, I was particularly pleased, because a lot of the podcasts, although they're Linux podcasts, tend to give Gentoo a bit of a hard time. I think mainly due to bad experiences in the past, or misconceptions that they might have, or they just don't like compile-based systems. So it's great to see, when I found out about your podcast and listened to it, I was really excited, because finally I've found a podcast that actually is positive about Gentoo, and also to listen to someone else's experiences and to learn from someone like yourself has been really good. So, all kudos to you for putting it out there. Also to Aggregator. I use Aggregator for catching RSS feeds, and I have about 50 feeds that I subscribe to. Most of those are Linux or admin-based feeds, and so that's a really great tool. I'm sure there are other great newsreader type applications that are also great that I'm not aware of, but since I use KDE, I guess I've just sort of defaulted to and it's good enough for me. And also too, I carry around a Palm Pilot, so KPilot's a great tool. I'm able to sync my everything that I have in contact, which is the PIM for KDE, able to get most of that onto my Palm, which is really handy.
Which open source products not currently available in the Portage tree would you like to see included?
In terms of a lot of sysadmin type products, I think Portage tree is really well covered, and a lot of the productivity type applications, I think the Portage tree has a lot of pretty much has that well covered as well. I think for me, being a father of four growing children who are crying out for new games, I struggle sometimes to find suitable games that are in the Portage tree. Now, I know I could probably use overlays and search for some overlays for new games, and I'm a bit hesitant in doing that, being someone who sort of had experiences in the past with using third-party repositories with Fedora and Red Hat and the like. I sort of would rather try and stay away from overlays unless it's a mission critical type need that I have to use one. So I'd love to see more games on there, particularly educational type games. But also too, just children's games generally. My children are between the ages of 5 and 9. So games that are sort of appropriate to them. I mean, first-person shooter games are very well covered in Portage, but there's one website I look at every day. It's called The Happy Penguin, which is a games, basically just gives you a list of open-source games that are released, and it's a really good one. It's like a distro watch for games, really. It's a pretty loose comparison, but that's the best I can do for this. But it basically, a whole bunch of open source games are published on here, and I find one. I might every now and then I might find one that I think would be really great for my children. So I'll go into I'll bring up my little Yarquake terminal, and I'll do an EIX on the name of the game or a string, and nine times out of ten it's not in Portage, and I think, oh, it would be nice if it was. I mean, I can always download the binary and use. I'll do try and do my own e-builds, and maybe one day I'll get around to doing that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I think for me, I'd love to see more games on there, mainly for my children more so than for me. But, yeah, most of the things are really well covered, and they're really well maintained, like KDE and GNOME and XFCE, for that matter. I've got one XFCE desktop as well, and also I've got a Fluxbox desktop. They're really well maintained, and applications work very well with those. So, yeah, I guess to sound like a broken record, games, and more games, and
yeah, sounds like you could be a developer, start maintaining the games for kids.
Look, I wish I had time to do that, and look, one day I will, I think, but things are just so busy. But I'd love to. Honestly, I'd love to. And one day, look, I'm sure I will.
What resources have you found most helpful when troubleshooting with Engine 2?
Yeah, for me, I'm somewhat someone who's sort of been a little bit burnt in mailing lists in the past. Like I've somehow put someone's nose at a joint from time to time and end up getting flamed for it. So I've tended to sort of be a bit more reclusive since those days. And I've been into mailing lists. So it's been mailing lists on another distro. But so I've sort of stayed away from tools that would commonly be used, things like IRC, where you know. But having said that, I think hopefully I've grown since then and can take a few hits on the cheek. But my greatest resource that I would use, or that I tend to use, is the forums, the Gentoo forums. I'll occasionally, if I do have a problem, that's usually the first place I'll look. And that's a great tool. And I'm not overly active on the forums, but if, for instance, I find a solution to something, I'll jump in and I'll actually put it on the forum if I haven't found it anywhere else. So that other people can, if they have come across the same issue, they can find it as well. And also for myself, if I have a 6 or 7 months down the track, the same problem, and I tend to forget things over a fairly reasonably short period of time. So if I come across the same problem again, I can just go back to the forum and hopefully find my own posting there. So that's one thing. Actually, if I could encourage any Gentoo users to do is to, if they find a solution that they haven't been able to, that they've worked out themselves, that they haven't been able to find in a forum, I encourage you to post your solution on the forum, even if it's, you start the post, just put it on there. I've seen a lot of people do that in the past too, and that's really good. It's really helpful. And although the the forums are moderated, I imagine that they'll probably just let, as long as it's helpful, they'll tend to let things like that just go on there, and it's been really good. And I've had some encouragement in the past from people who have come across the same issue, and have put a response to my posting saying, yeah, this has really helped me as well, for that, and that's, you know, that gives you the warm fuzzy feeling inside to know that you've helped somebody. So that's the first usually my first port of call. Also too, I guess for troubleshooting, I think now I'll start using the IRC. I've sort of jumping in there in the Linux Crazy IRC has sort of been a bit of a step for me in doing that. I've never really gone into an IRC channel before, so I'll probably start using that a bit more. I haven't been in the Gentoo one yet, but I'll probably pay that one a visit at some point and just sort of park myself there, and I think that would be good too. But yeah, I'd say the forums, and if the Gentoo forums fail me, then which is very rare, I'll probably jump on something like Linux Questions. If it's an application type issue, forums like Linux Questions or Linux Forums will tend to have solutions there, so I'd go over there and do that. Although lately, the Linux Questions forum, although it's a great forum, there's a lot of information there. I know that, I think it's Jeremy Garcia is the guy who looks after it. He's put in some extra roadblocks there to stop spam bots getting in there, and I respect that and I appreciate that, but I just find that a nuisance, so I tend to not visit there as frequently, but look, it's no issue. But I like the Gentoo forums very much, and definitely use those.
What resources have you used to keep up to date with the latest trends in open source software and to provide tips and tutorials?
Right. For me, I would say that podcasts are probably my number one. I download my podcast once a month, so by the time I get it, probably some of the information that I downloaded isn't so up to date. But I do find a lot of interesting information. I mean, podcasts such as the Linux Action Show is really good. They tend to give a lot of good up-to-date news on there and reviews, and they're so excited about it that you know, sort of makes me laugh from time to time. But they're a good podcast for that kind of thing. The Linux Link Show is also a good one for that. They often will discuss current issues and give you good perspective. Lug Radio is another one that will do that. Although I've been hearing that they might be ending their show, which is a real pity. But I appreciate that not everything can last forever. So they're probably the main ones. There are plenty of other shows as well that are really good. And I subscribe. I probably subscribe to just about every Linux podcast that there is. I just can't get enough of them. I'll just put them on my iRiver, and while I'm at work, I'll just put them on. But other tools and resources I use, I go into my feed reader every morning, download my feeds, and things like Free Software Daily is great. OSDIR is another top news site. Linux Weekly News, which I don't think they have an aggregate, a feed read, but I could jump on their site and they'll have some good headlines there. There's the old favourites like Slashdot and Dig, although, you know, the credibility of both have been under fire for some time, but you can usually substantiate some of the things that they talk about within other feeds. Linux Gazette's a pretty good one too. And that's, you can download that as a PDF, and I can install that on my Palm. So if I'm travelling overseas or something on a sales mission, I'll usually have a few Linux Gazette articles on there, and I will read through those. They'll occasionally have discussion points on there. Tutorials, I subscribe to a few of those. The Linux Basement have some great tutorials, and all kudos, I think it's Chad, who hosts that show. So he puts up tutorials every so often, and they're really good too. He's had some tutorials on security within Linux, and that's being a partly a sysadmin, that's of interest to me. So he's talked about how to install Snort and Metasploit and Nmap and things like that. So they're good tutorials. They're very simple, easy to understand. Also, just on the point of security, the paul.com.com podcast do also release tutorials, and they're very handy as well. If you want to have a hand at securing your servers, How to Forge is really good with tutorials, open source tutorials. They're really great, and these are rarely Gentoo specific. They're mainly Ubuntu or CentOS or SUSE, but the same, once you've emerged it, it's pretty much the same. And if you've used Gentoo for a little while, if configuration files are in different places, you can generally understand where they're going to be in Gentoo. So I find that the fact that they're not specifically Gentoo tutorials doesn't really make a difference to me. Another top one is Tux Machines released tutorials. Me and IT is a recent one that I've come across, and they're really nice, simple tutorials as well. Linux Step by Step's another one, although they haven't released any for a while. And a great one that I've just recently got into is the IBM, their DeveloperWorks. They release tutorials as well, and they're really good ones. I mean, they do tend to be Red Hat based, but they're really top tutorials. And basically having them all in an aggregator is great, because if you're looking for a tutorial on installing a particular piece of software, you can just search for it in your own aggregator, and usually you get three or four hits after you've been accumulating them for a while, and then they're just there. You don't even have to be online to run to view them. So yeah, there's some resources for people out there if they wanted to look into those.
What ways have you helped the Gentoo community in the past, and in what ways would you consider helping the community in the future?
Helping out in the forums, although I haven't posted a huge amount of posts, or I haven't provided a huge amount of solutions. Occasionally, when I've got a bit of time, I'll go in there and I'll just have a look and see what issues people are having, and if I've come across that problem in the past, or if I have a fairly good idea on how to help, I'll generally post something. But that's probably the extent. I've heard your interviews in the past with Gentoo developers, and they would really love people to put in bug reports in their Bugzilla system, and I think I'd like to do that. Although I can't say that I've found a lot of bugs in my usage of it that are probably not more upstream bugs for developers of those products. I haven't really found too many. I don't think I've ever found that I can recall any Gentoo specific bugs that haven't already been put into Bugzilla. So I haven't really done that. But I guess one can always have a test environment and just download all the testing versions of the software that you use and then start using it, and I'm sure I'd find bugs, but I haven't gone down that path. But that might be something I might do at some stage. I've got a few spare PCs, and if I have some time, I might be more active in testing. But at the moment, it's just mainly just helping out in the forums, and I'll probably in the future, probably in the not too distant future, I'll probably become more active in IRC channels. Probably just listen out for things in there, and just if there's anything I've come across, I could probably contribute to a solution. I don't know if I'd be a developer. I really appreciate the fact that there's quite a bit of testing involved in becoming a Gentoo developer, and I think that's really good for the integrity of the system, and I hope that never changes. If anything, it'd be, if it could be better, that'd be great, although we don't want to scare people off at the same time, so I guess there's a balance you've got to strike there. Probably in the short term, I don't think I'd ever really make an attempt to be a developer, but perhaps sometime down the track, as my children grow up and I'm no longer their taxi driver, and I've got a bit more time on my hands, I might well look into doing that. But that won't be for some years off. And probably before I do that, I'll probably start experimenting with my own e-builds at some point, and just sort of get a grasp of doing that first. So I guess those are the areas. So just really forums at the moment.
How do you keep the systems backed up?
I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I use rsync and tar predominantly. So although lately I have discovered the virtues of using something like CloneZilla, which is a fantastic tool, which could be used for backup occasionally. The great thing with CloneZilla that I found is that you can back up your whole hard drive, and that is great. I mean, I recently upgraded the hard drive of my laptop from a 60 gig drive, which is, as you can imagine, if you've got a VMware partition running Windows XP, which you really need a minimum of 20 gig for that. You don't have a lot of space left if you wanted to do anything like editing in your own time, or even keeping a couple of databases there for customers. So I found the need, I had to upgrade the drive, so I used CloneZilla to clone it, and basically copy the partition, the whole hard drive, all the hard drive partitions off to my other to a 320 gig drive, and then extend the partitions out using gparted, and that worked great. It was trouble free. It was easy. You don't need to be a sysadmin or a developer to use it. It's the greatest tool. So I can see that being a great tool also for backing up your just doing a full backup of your hard drives for your servers every so often. I wouldn't do it all the time. Maybe once every 6 months or so, just do a system down and do that. But yeah, rsync our servers every day to the backup server. And then once a week, we rsync the backup server to an external drive. And then what I do is I tar the critical files, mainly the critical data files, into DVD size chunks. You can use Split, which is a great tool. You can pipe tar through Split to do that. And then burn them onto DVDs, and then every now and then, just test them to make sure they're okay. But I would burn them to DVDs, say once every 2 weeks to a month. I don't go overboard with all of that. But that seems to work well. It's a system that worked. That's proven for us because we have had servers down, and we have lost at times. Developers do delete documents. Fortunately, using CVS, if they, if they delete their bit of code, they can always get it back from the repository. So that's not an issue. But when someone deletes whole chunks of documentation and can't retrieve it, then the backups are really valuable. Particularly the backup server is a really valuable tool, and that gets synced twice a day. So once during our lunchtime period. We'll rsync across to that, and once after hours, it'll get an rsync from our primary server.
I love hearing Aussie slang. What are some of the words you use, and what do they mean?
You see, David, you said the words I use. I don't use a lot of slang, but for us, I guess here we tend to call each other mate a lot. Which I suppose you don't do so much over there. So I'll see someone down the street. I might say, that I know. I might say, "G'day, mate," or "G'day, Joe," or whatever his name is. So that's probably the extent of the slang that I use. There are other slang like "dunny," which is toilet. I draw a blank with slang because I don't use it. So. I can't really help you out with too much. Maybe as we as we chat every now and then, I'll probably come up with some more, and I'll type them out in the IRC, in the channel.
All right. How did you come up with the nick Weirded Out?
That's a good question. With my nick, I guess when I was first getting into a bit of IRC, some of the nicks that I tried to try out, they were already taken up. So I was starting to struggle with finding a nick that I kind of like. So on one occasion when I was just going to IRC, I was having a chat with my wife, and sometimes I might say things that she finds a bit strange. I'm a bit of a peculiar person at times, and she'll sort of look at me in a strange look, and she'll smile, and she'll say that I'm weird. You know, she means it in a loving, you know, joking sort of way. So I think what it must have happened is subconsciously I had one of those moments with my wife, and I jumped onto IRC and I couldn't get a nick. So then I just thought, weird, you know, that must have just popped into mind, and I just typed in Weirded Out. And that seems, strangely enough, David, in the IRC channels that I've been in, no one's ever used that name for some weird reason. So I guess I've stuck with it, and it probably describes me pretty well most of the time. But, you know, I probably am a bit weird from time to time in either case. I guess that's how it's come about. Yeah.
Hey, Noel. Thank you very much for our talk. I really enjoyed it.
It's my pleasure, David. I appreciate the opportunity that you've given me to talk. And although I'm not a high contributor to the project, you know, I'm not high profile, but I guess hopefully quite a few out there can identify with some of the things that I've talked about today, and hopefully some people have come across, you know, have learned a few things too, and you know, that's what it's all about, I guess, in being part of a community, is helping each other out and getting involved. And David, I think what you're doing with your podcast is fantastic. It takes a lot of, as we say here in Australia, it takes a lot of guts to do it, and because you're up for scrutiny when you do something like this, because you're putting yourself out there to the public. But I really do appreciate it. I really love hearing your experiences, you know, I hope and pray that you keep on doing it, because I think it's a great service to us Gentoo users.
Well, thank you. And we'll do this again. We'll talk again.
That'd be great.
Okay,
not a
buddy.
Problem. I'm available.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Great. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.